Solar and wind are some of the fastest growing energy sources. One problem, though, is that they are intermittent. It's not always windy and the sun sets. Seasons change, cutting daylight hours, so on. To deal with this, we need a way to store electricity for use during times of peak demand, energy storage. In this video, a simple and reliable energy storage scheme that has been used for decades and is now somewhat back in vogue. A lake upon a hill. But first, I want to remind you, the Asianometry Patreon. Early access members get to see new videos first with selected references attached. It really helps a lot and is one of the best ways to support the channel. I deeply appreciate all of you, and whenever I meet any one of my patrons, I try to buy them a coffee. Thank you, and on with the show. Pumped storage, sometimes also called pumped hydroelectricity storage, or just pumped hydro storage, or whatever you want to call it, is brilliant in its simplicity. The pumped hydroelectric storage facility is connected to an upper and lower reservoir. The upper reservoir tends to be larger since that is where the energy is stored. During off-peak hours, more power is being generated than being used, so the facility uses that extra power to pump water up into the upper reservoir. Then during peak hours, the upper reservoir releases water down through a turbine into the lower reservoir to generate power. The core goal is time shifting. We turn cheaper off-peak energy into expensive on-peak energy, and the installation can actually buy low and sell high. Pumped hydro storage systems can store a lot of energy. That amount stored can be measured by looking at the upper reservoir's total storage volume and its height in relation to the lower reservoir. It is true, though, that you won't get as much back out as you put into it. About 70 to 80% of the energy spent pumping the water into the upper reservoir is eventually recovered, a metric known as cycle efficiency. That number is not particularly high, so that needs to be considered in investment calculations. The most basic type of pump storage system is the pure, or closed loop. This is where the station only pumps the water in the reservoirs without natural inward flow. A few examples. France's Montazique power station is a closed-loop system. With 910 megawatts capacity, it is the country's second-largest facility. As is Australia's 250-megawatt Kidston Pumped Storage Hydro Project, which is in development. It's Australia's first pumped storage system in 40 years. It uses two former mining pits as the upper and lower reservoirs, which is kind of cool. Closed loops are uncommon, so their environmental impact is not well studied. But theoretically, it should be less impactful because there's more flexibility in where to put them, and they are disconnected from a larger ecosystem. A more commonly found alternative is an open-loop pumped hydro system. This is when one or both of the two reservoirs are connected to a naturally flowing water source. All of the United States' existing 43 pump storage stations are open loop. How it usually goes is that there is already some existing hydroelectric project, like a river or stream, and the engineers notice that the terrain makes it possible to tack on the upper reservoir. These are often cheaper to build, but being connected to the local hydro ecosystem, their power output is more dependent on seasonal variations and natural conditions. For example, the San Diego Hodges Reservoir has a small 40-megawatt pumped storage facility attached to it, but it has been offline recently due to low water levels. And then there are a few twists on the concept. For instance, you have the underground pumped storage scheme. Here, the upper reservoir is on the surface, and the lower reservoir is located some hundreds of feet underground. It's still a concept, but presents an interesting use case for caverns or abandoned mines, assuming we can overcome some of the technical risks like keeping the underground reservoir stable and removing or venting potentially explosive mine gas. Another interesting variant is the seasonal pumped storage system. These are adapted to offer long-term water storage benefits as well. Water is pumped into the reservoir when that water is plentiful, like during the rainy seasons, and then during the dry season, that stored water is released to both generate electricity as well as service people or plants with potable water. The first known pumped hydro storage stations were built in the Alpine areas of Europe. Such areas offer two of the most important things we need to build a pumped storage station, a difference in elevations close together, and a lot of water. In 1909, what has been called the first pump storage system opened in Schaffhausen, Switzerland. It was small, with separate pumps and turbines. By the 1930s, there were 40 such facilities across Europe. The first utility-scale pumped hydro storage station in the United States was the Connecticut Light and Power's Rocky River Station, which began operations in 1929. It was connected to the Housatonic River, and when the river's water level was high and power abundant, then the pump storage station's two reversible pumps pump water uphill to an artificial lake called Candlewood. At peak load, water falls back down through those same reversible pumps to the river to generate power. The $6 million Rocky River Station was an engineering milestone. However, its design was not widely adopted. So prior to the 1950s, the pumps and turbines were mostly separate. This was good for efficiency because it meant you can design each for maximum performance, but doing so added substantial extra installation cost. Then in 1956, the Tennessee Valley Authority installed the Hiwassee Dam Unit 2. That unit featured the world's largest and most powerful reversible turbine, combining pump and power generation capabilities into one. The single-unit arrangement supplanted the old setup of separate pumps and turbines. In the late 1950s and 1960s, American utilities started investigating the integration of nuclear energy into their grids. Nuclear energy produces a continuous, inflexible amount of energy. Engineers realized that they needed to time shift that supply to match demand, and pump storage was the perfect way to do that. For the next few decades, pump storage and nuclear were highly bound together. The two were often designed together as part of the same power complex. Reservoirs were placed in between the nuclear station and large population centers. And then in the 1970s, we had the global energy crisis. This kicked off massive investments into energy generation, and pump storage came along with the ride. The next two decades saw some of the world's largest pump storage systems built in the US, Japan, and Europe. For example, the Bath County Pumped Storage Scheme in Virginia started in 1977 and completed 8 years later in 1985 at a cost of $1.6 billion. It had max power generating capacity of 2.1 gigawatts at the time of completion, and retained the crown as the world's biggest for over 40 years. Japan, with their mountainous terrain, plentiful water, and own nuclear energy push, built a lot of these after having basically none before the 1970s. Some of these are quite large, like the Okuta-Toragi Pumped Storage Power Station, one of the largest in the world. Europe built 80% of their existing pump storage systems between the 1960s and 1990s as well. These include some of their largest existing facilities, like France's Grand Mason Dam and the Markerbach plant in Germany. This global pump storage construction boom ended in the 1990s for a number of reasons. One major reason was the decline of nuclear energy itself. When the nuclear build-out stopped in the US and Europe due to regulation, overexpansion, and high-profile negative incidents, so did pump storage. And like nuclear, pump storage had environmental and location issues. You need a very specific location, ideal for two reservoirs, horizontally close to one another, but vertically separated by at least a few hundred meters. Oh, and water. Many surface facilities require the construction of a dam, often in scenic areas. That can be quite disruptive to the local environment, ecosystem, and community. They certainly aroused a great deal of opposition. Beyond that, many of the best sites ended up being built out, and the remaining sites weren't great. That's a bit of what happened in Japan. But the Japanese, to their credit, were undeterred. They built the first pump storage facility to use seawater, the Okinawa Yanbaru Pump Station. This prototype station costs about 3.2 billion Japanese yen, and had to overcome some unique technical issues, especially regarding seawater transport. But it works. Sadly, however, it failed to turn a profit and was eventually dismantled in 2016. This leads me to a larger market change. Before the 1990s, utilities in the United States and Europe were vertically integrated monopolies handling both generation and transmission. for instance France's EDF and Italy's Enel. Then in the 1990s, many states and countries moved to a competitive wholesale market with power being freely bought and sold. Independent companies were allowed to enter the market to add competition. This changed the economics of pumped storage hydro. In the old days, the big monopoly utilities can justify the $1 to $2 billion upfront investment costs plus an ongoing 20 to 30% efficiency loss because it optimized their own power systems. But now those systems were split apart, and a deregulated market closed the gap between peak and off-peak prices, making asset cost recovery more uncertain. Mix in the rise of LNG, and you can see why investment in pump storage projects, at least in the US and Europe, ended for many years. Now, the new rise of intermittent solar and wind energy sources has renewed interest in pump storage. And the People's Republic of China is in the midst of one of the great renewable energy infrastructure booms in history. To properly match all that intermittent supply with demand, China's big state-owned utilities, like State Grid of China, the world's third largest company by revenue, is also building a lot of pumped hydro storage too. The Chinese are late to the party, starting in the 1990s, but caught up fast. In 2014, China had the third most installed capacity in the world behind Europe and Japan. They had about 22.6 gigawatts back then. They have since rocketed way, way past that. In mid-2024, the Chinese government announced they had 50 gigawatts of installed pumped storage capacity. This includes the world's largest single pump storage facility, Fengning, with total capacity of over 3.6 gigawatts. Their pace of construction shows no sign of stopping. Projections have them hitting 63 gigawatts by the end of this year, 2025. Their long-term goal, per a 2021 planning document put out by their National Energy Administration, is to have 305 gigawatts of capacity by 2035. Compared to that madness, pump storage capacity growth in the rest of the world has been rather anemic. In Japan, new projects are still ongoing, including units 3 to 6 of the Kanagawa hydropower plant, and upon completion, it would be the third biggest pump storage facility in the world. Europe's energy crisis has made pump storage's high energy capacities more attractive, and a number of expansions and new projects are in the works in Switzerland, France, Italy, Albania, and Bulgaria. There are a number of projects in Scotland, where wind energy has really blown up. One project that caught my eye is at the world-famous Loch Ness. Announced in 2024, it would have up to 2 gigawatts of power generation capacity, enough for 400,000 households, though there are concerns about the loch's water levels, the well-being of the Atlantic salmon, and the monster, of course. And then there is the United States. The rise of intermittent renewables in the 2010s, plus significant tax credits from the 2022 Inflation Reduction Act, has brought a compelling case to start building these again. The United States has plenty of eligible sites for more pump storage, and the American Federal Energy Regulatory Commission has permitted 24 pump storage projects to go forth. Yet the United States has not completed a large-scale pump storage facility since 1985, the aforementioned Bath County, and no project of any size has been completed since 2012, the aforementioned Hodges Lake system in San Diego. Such delays have been due to various local environmental concerns, an example being the 1.3 gigawatt Eagle Mountain hydroelectric pump storage project. They first applied to build this using two unused mining pits in the desert back in 2009. FERC authorized it 5 years later in 2014. But things have since been held up due to litigation over the use of 35 billion gallons of desert groundwater spread out over 50 years, right-of-way approvals, and concerns about effects on the nearby Joshua Tree National Park. It's been 11 years, and we haven't yet started construction. Just normal California things. One of the reasons why the United States has not been really growing its pump storage capacity has been the rise of alternatives, the most formidable of which are the battery energy storage systems, or BESS. These are essentially utility-scale enclosures of batteries, most often lithium-ion. Compared to pump storage, they store far less energy, but offer more flexibility and cycle efficiency. They're also somewhat easier to build. Nowadays, battery enclosures are built inside standard-sized shipping containers and moved right to the site for install. BESS are growing fast, especially in the south and southwestern regions of the United States, states like Texas and California, where there is a lot of sun or wind. Prior to 2024, pump storage was the United States' largest form of utility-scale stored power generation, with about 20 to 22 gigawatts of capacity. But in 2024, the United States nearly doubled its amount of battery storage, so BESS is now ahead with 29 gigawatts of power-generating capacity. Considering BESS's high speed of installation, so far, and the slow rate of new pump storage projects, I do not expect them to give up that spot anytime soon. Before we conclude, I want to thank Dr. Julian Hunt of the King Abdullah University of Science and Technology for introducing me to the world of pump storage hydro systems and taking the time to speak with me on them. Now, does the rise of BESS mean that we relegate the pump storage plant to the dustbin? Maybe not. Pump storage systems can still provide power for longer periods of time than BESS can, like overnight. They can occupy the large capacity niche, while BESS handles situations where a fast ramp-up is necessary. And BESS have their own issues relating to technology complexity, supply chain concerns, and fire risks. We shall see if pump storage's economics and use cases can help them overcome the substantial local challenges of doing more hydroelectric projects in the US and most of the rest of the world. I hope it does. Alright everyone, that's it for tonight. Thanks for watching. Subscribe to the channel, sign up for the newsletter, and I'll see you guys next time.